I was wondering why there was a rejoin that included a real nuanced, strong sports take from Stu Gotts. And I'm like, what's the hook here? Ricketts was not part owner of the team when Sosa was playing for him. Got him. Peter Burns, Chris Doering in the air on the Dan Le Batard Show. Remember, all guests on the Dan Le Batard Show up here via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We're going to be joined by the head coach of the Florida Gators, Coach Dan Mullen. I bet he's gambled on a couple of things, weird things in his life. That is the, I would say, the overall topic of today's show. But before we get into that, do we want to gamble on this? Roy, over and under, on a scale of 1 to 10, Chris Doering's upcoming read. What are we setting the Sports Center read on a scale of 1 to 10 in proficiency?
I'm going to put it at a 7.5.
You're going to put 7.5. Do I have anybody taking
the... I feel like I'm upwards. Come on.
Listen, Cody, you're going over 7.5.
Thank you.
Anthony, you're going over on that. Billy, you're taking the over and under. Whoa, you're taking the under. I'm going under as well, too.
Yeah, I feel like now there's pressure.
There is.
Right. He is listen, he's like a Florida Ring of Fame guy, Florida Hall of Famer, played in the NFL. The guy is a gamer. You know what? I'm going to go over as well, too. Over 7.5 on a scale of 1 to 10 that my boy is going to absolutely crush this SportsCenter update. Now we go. Here we go. SportsCenter update. Don't let me down, Doering. Go.
Well, Austin Dillon won Sunday's NASCAR Xfinity Series race in Texas ahead of Tyler Reddick, giving Richard Childress Racing its first 1-2 NASCAR Cup finish in 9 years. Kyle Busch, who had Saturday's win voided via disqualification on Saturday, finished fourth yesterday. A 2003-2004 LeBron James Upper Deck rookie patch parallel card sold at auction for $1.845 million on Sunday at Golden Auctions to Lob.com CEO Lior Avidar. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Cash that ticket! Cash that ticket! Cash that ticket! Billy, what are you doing?
I'd like to thank God for putting me in this position. Thank you
all the little people.
Kindergarten teacher for allowing me to read, helping me learn the words.
Where was that at the first 2 hours? Good God, I didn't gamble on those.
I had no guidance at all. This is my first time doing this show. I had no guidance on what I was doing at all. I blame you guys for not putting me in a position to succeed.
Whoa. Roy, that's on you because you're part of the sponsorship read crew here. Roy, you want to address that?
Yeah, I gave everything to you, Peter.
And, yes, it was forwarded from you, PB. Yeah.
Okay. By the way, I would like to cash my ticket, Billy. Roy, thank you for saying under 7.5.
No, Roy took over. Roy took over with me, right? No, or he took
Roy?
Over? Yeah, I took over. I set the bar at 7.5 and I took over.
No, it was only Billy that went lower? Billy, you wanna explain yourself why you went below 7.5 here on what you thought during SportsCenter read was going to be?
Well, it seemed like good action. Everybody was on the other side, so I was trying to, cash in.
Yeah, when the bus gets
good,
heavy.
It was like an 8.5, I think.
It was pretty decent. I think the under 7.5 had gotten such good odds at that point that it was probably like plus 140. Like, put 100 down, you get 140. So I don't mind that whatsoever. But
are you eating on the show right now? Do you have a mouthful of food, PB?
Me? No.
Yeah.
Are you good? Huh? Just sound weird. Thank you. I appreciate that.
It sounds like you're got a dip in, or you're eating some granola bar or something.
That's what I'm going to do.
A dip,
just a big old dip, just a big old heater. What am I, Greg McElroy? I'm not going to dip on
McElroy
air.
McElroy said he quit. He declared that he gave up dip, and he's a lesser man for it.
I'll be happy to gamble on that, on whether or not Greg McElroy actually gave up dip. Billy, I asked the question on the Dan Le Batard Twitter account. What's the weirdest thing that someone has gambled on? CD, you said. You shared your story.
I wasn't sure what the constructs were, but I went with betting on women's Final Four, which, is kind of weird. But evidently that's not weird enough amongst our people on Twitter and the crew here.
I'll share mine real quick. A couple of years ago, I found myself in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I was dating my now wife. And so we go home for Christmas. And at that point, there was a club volleyball tournament that we got roped into with my sixth grade, now I guess what, niece or my wife's niece. And so we get there and I'm like, I'm like, oh, how long are we staying for this thing? Like 30? And they're like, we're here for the day. So we're like a whole 6 hours into club volleyball in Albuquerque, New Mexico, sixth graders. And at some point, I'm just bored as hell. I've scrolled through Twitter. I've done every single social media website. I finished the internet. And I look at another dad, and I'm like, and he was feeling the same thing. I'm like, well, let's do this. I said, $20 a game. Let's just go to a random, because I didn't want to bet on his girl's game. Because I felt like that was, he already knew the information. He already had the scouting report on whether or not they're good or not.
You didn't care about betting against his daughter. It was just more about the unfair advantage.
Listen, money's money. I'll be honest with you. I would absolutely bet against my daughter in any sport if it mean that I could at least purchase her something. That's the human being I am. So I made us go across the gym because it's played in one of these big auditoriums. And we went from like Ruidosa, New Mexico versus like Los Lunas, New Mexico, right? Sixth graders. And I'm like, all right, let's set the odds. By the end of the day, we had a traveling group of about 8 dads, okay, that are just randomly betting. By the way, ended up $120 up.
Were you the bookkeeper? Were you getting a little skim action off the top?
I mean, I'm not going to agree or disagree because I don't remember if I can go back and do my taxes from that year. I think this was back in 2011. I don't need to talk about that per se. But
here's your problem, PB. My daughter played club volleyball for her entire life. The thing that you missed out on is all the veteran dads, they always tailgate. In between games, you go outside, you got a cooler, you're drinking beers, it makes the volleyball much more fun. So, you know, I blame you didn't get good guidance from the other dad.
I can just see Chris Doring being hammered gambling on some other Port St. Lucie's club volleyball team and just upset that you lost a $50 parlay.
The thing you have to know is in volleyball in these big tournaments, they have an AM wave and a PM wave. If you get the PM wave and you've been drinking, like by the end, it's competitive. I mean, I've gotten into it with officials. I've gotten into it with other teams. You know, it helps fuel the intensity of the games when you're tailgating in between.
Round the horn, Anthony, right now, strangest thing that you have ever gambled on in your life here?
So back in college when I was at UCF, we had a group of like 4 or 5 of us that went from Miami up to Orlando to go to school. And I'm going to keep all the names out of it to protect the innocent. But there was one of our buddies that we said, look, we'll bet you, I don't even remember, it's $20 a head. We'll bet you that you won't go to that Domino's guy that's delivering across the street, yank off that sign and run away with it and bring it back. As he goes out, the guy's, at the front of the house, he's giving the pizza. Our buddy goes, grabs it off the car. It's magnetic, by the way, and it's pretty heavy. He starts booking it back to our apartment. As he sees that, the guy, the Domino's guy, turns around, drops the bag, starts hauling, trying to go catch him. And they are outside running around the parking lot for 5 minutes till the guy finally just threw down the thing and he picked it up and went back home. I think they have to pay for it on the back end if they get stolen. So this guy was not letting that Domino's thing go. We ended up, making money because he didn't bring it back home. But that's definitely the weirdest thing I've bet on.
So boy was completely fatigued and he lost $20 too?
Yeah.
Bad combo.
That's a rough. That's a rough looking. Can you imagine? I mean, thank goodness that the Domino's guy got his magnetic thing back. Can you imagine? Hey, listen, yeah, I made $60 in tips, but I lost my $500 Domino's magnetic deposit.
I love that he was so invested in it, though. That's great that he cared that much,
Billy, I know you've got one. All right, we'll get to Billy in just a second. Cody, I know that you're team content here. What do you have? Strongest thing you've ever gambled on sporting event-wise?
Now, mine is a lot more legal than Tony's was. Now, see, when quarantine started, I was betting on Australian ponies a lot. That's not the weirdest one. That's just my side one. Like late at night, 1 a.m., I'm betting ponies with my friends on Zoom. The other thing I was betting with my friends on Zoom was I have in my backyard a little window where you can see a roadway where cars drive by. So we would bet on what color the next car would be that would drive by in my backyard. So like I would put $10 on white. My friend would put 20, they would bet somebody $20 worth red car. And then whatever the next car was that happened to drive by, that's the weirdest thing.
Did you feel a pattern developing where you knew that, hey, listen, the black car or the white car or blue was where you needed to put your money?
I did realize that we didn't really cheat like that. But once I was down about $100, I did text my wife to get in her car and drive by the spot.
Double it up.
But is there a common color that there's more of than there are the rest? I mean,
I think white and black are the most common, but I randomly pulled an orange out of the air and I and I got one right with my
wife. I feel like that should have paid odds, Chris. Like,
yeah.
If to odd, orange car should have paid like plus 180 or something, man.
Well, it was one of those things where if I bet you, you say white, I say red. If the next one's neither, nothing happens. So that's what made it like an even thing. It was kind of like of our bet. What's the like? What are we going to see first?
Billy, quickly, give me one here from the one or two from the Lebatard Twitter account, please.
All right, from the account we have baby racing, turtle racing, marble racing. We have tarantula racing, and then there was a group of friends that all put popcorn kernels in the microwave, and whoever's popcorn kernel popped first won the bet.
I feel like that's a tough one. Did you you would have to color said kernels at this point? Feels like a lot of effort.
I have one from my childhood that I wasn't betting, and I didn't realize was going on until I was older. So are you guys familiar with the Pinewood Derby?
Yes, the Cub Scout Pinewood Derby.
Yeah,
so the Cub Scouts, you build like little racing cars, right, made out of like a block of wood. And I was participating in it as a Cub Scout, and I'd noticed that like the father seemed very invested in what was going on. And between races, you'd see kind of like exchanges going on, things are going back and forth between people's hands. And then years later, I realized, oh, that was probably parents gambling on their kids' block of wood cars.
And speaking of cheating, like, by the way, didn't people used to cheat with that, like front load their Pinewood Derby cars in an effort to win a Cub Scout competition?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because while it's the kids' race cars, you realize it's really the dad's race cars. And some of these things, you realize, I can't make this block of wood out of like the little knife that comes with the set and like sandpaper. You see like professional drills and like aerodynamic things. Like, you knew whose dad was an engineer based on how those cars came out.
I also feel like it's something that Stu Gotts would just rent a kid for the day and just get into the Pinewood Derby just to go gamble on it. And just because he's perfected it. I feel like that would have been a Stu Gotts move. By the way, our Twitter poll is at Lebatard Show, brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for ultimate protection and shine in no time. All right, coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll talk to Dan Mullen, head coach of the Florida Gators. Some news regarding what's happening in college football and whether or not we will actually get it this fall. Peter Burns, Chris Story, and this is the Dan Lebatard Show with Stu Gotts. Dan Lebatard Show with Stu Gotts. No Lebatard, no Stu Gotts. They'll be back tomorrow. Peter Burns, Chris Doering, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. And, of course, if you miss any of the show and gambling on 6th grade club volleyball in New Mexico, you can listen to all 3 hours of the Dan Lebatard Show, plus the Miami-only hour, the Lauer, and the best of podcasts on demand of the ESPN app. Subscribe to the Lebatard and Friends podcast network, including South Beach Sessions, Stupidity, and Mystery Crate. Please rate and subscribe. New episodes are posted every week where you get your podcast. News that just came across my Twitter timeline here, Chris Doering, is that looks like the state of California has decided that they are moving football. Now, this is high school football in the state of California, will be moved to the spring of 2021. That coming from CIF State, which is kind of the governing body of California independent and high school football. What does this mean, CD, once we get closer to trying to decide if we will get at least collegiate football being played here in the fall?
Well, what comes to mind for me is, you know, as a guy that played football, baseball, and basketball, like, what about these guys that are playing multiple sports? How are they going to be able to manage doing that? You know, I think all of this has put, unfortunately, a lot of pressure on kids. And you know, I've talked to you before about my daughter graduating this past year and not having prom or graduation or grad night or any of that stuff. Like, these kids are the ones that I feel the most sorry for. So I'm at least appreciative that they're going to try to find a way to play the season. But I think it's going to create some really difficult situations for these athletes as they try to figure out what's most important, how they're able to manage both of them. And, you know, if in fact it even is better by the time we get to spring. I hate to sound like a negative guy, given what we heard earlier about a potential vaccine at Oxford. But, you know, who knows if it's going to be any better by the time we get to the spring of 2021.
You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Doering, myself at Peter Burns ESPN. It is interesting. And that's, you talk about how you have a delicate conversation. The delicate conversation is that California high school football doesn't make bajillions of dollars. They have looked at it as a health risk and saying, you know what? we're just kicking it back. We don't feel comfortable of where the country's at as far as our testing, our protocols, what it takes to have a safe season. So we're going to start playing back in December and January. That's when college or high school football is going to start. You look at the Ivy League, you look at a lot of the smaller conferences, the FCF schools have decided pretty much the same thing. We're playing in spring. Then it's a conversation of Power Five schools and the major money of college football, CD, SEC, ACC, Big 12, even the Pac-12 and the Big 10 are still trying to have their seasons. Kind of comes to the point of it was just a public safety question. How much college football would be played here in September versus also the money that's involved right now?
Yeah, I mean, you have to believe that the money is a big motivator right now. But I also am going to look at it glass half full kind of guy too. With all of that money gives you more opportunity. The things that high school can't do that you mentioned, the testing. You know, I think these Power Five schools have the ability to invest more in the testing protocol. Like, I don't like the NCAA's guidelines that they put out last week about testing 72 hours in advance of competition. Like, you know, I got the coronavirus a couple weeks ago. My daughter, both my kids were with me. I tested positive on the 22nd. My daughter tested negative that day, but didn't test positive until the 24th. There's an incubation period that differs from person to person. I think if you're going to play, you have to dedicate at least to testing every other day, if not every single day, in a way to keep everybody safe and guarantee that the season's able to be played and be able to play through the entire schedule.
That's what the NFL Players Association wants right now. They want testing every single day. When we talk to these coaches, at least on the collegiate level, the tests are about $120 a person. If you're talking about that for a collegiate football team, you're talking about $10,000 a pop on every time you get it. The issue is how quickly can you turn around these tests? Because, you know, the Chiefs and the Texans, their rookies are showing up for NFL training camps today, their rookie camp. All they're doing is going to the facility, taking a test, and leaving. Now, they'll do the same thing tomorrow. The question is, how quickly can you get these back, and do you feel like they're actually accurate tests? And that's a question that college football is going to have as well.
Well, I think that one thing you have to do is have these schools privatize the testing, the labs, so that you can get it back quicker and not burden the overall rest of the society with the number of tests you're going to have to take. I also, speaking from a firsthand perspective, I did the rapid response test three different times. Was positive all three times. I took, you know, another one later in the process. But I think the accuracy is pretty good with those tests. And I think there's a way that these schools are able to invest with the money they have. I think it's a lesser of two evils, right? You're either going to lose out on the television money, and that can have a cascading effect that we don't even know what's going to happen. Or you take some of that money and you invest it in testing and giving yourself the best chance to have a season.
Well, we see Lincoln Riley, the news coming out on Twitter as well, too, that they tested 100 of their student-athletes over on Friday, and I believe out of 100, there were one positive test, and that was it. And we've seen that throughout college football. University of Kentucky had zero. Penn State had zero. So these bubble protocols in college football, CD, at least for now, appear to be working with no kids on campus.
Look at Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is not doing what the NBA and NHL are doing. They are having a little bit more open environment, and yet their positive test rate is like under 1%. So I think there's a lot that can be learned from all of these leagues that are going ahead of college football in terms of how to do it. You just have to decide you're going to do it and then figure out the best way to go about accomplishing that.
We'll talk to Dan Mullen, the head coach at the Florida Gators, in a couple of moments about that. Welcome back to Lebatard Show with Stu Gatz. No Lebatard, no Stu Gatz. He'll be back tomorrow. Peter Burns, Chris Doering in for those two fine gentlemen. And remember, guests on the Dan Lebatard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We're going to be joined by Florida Gators head coach Dan Mullen momentarily. But Chris Doering, don't let me down. You have done two great SportsCenter reads in a row. Can we make it three?
I've got my last one here for you, PB.
Let's go.
2003-2004 LeBron James Upper Deck Rookie Patch Parallel Card. Sold at auction for $1.845 million on Sunday at Golden Auctions to Lob.com CEO Leor Avidar. In racing here, Austin Dillon won Sunday's NASCAR Xfinity Series race in Texas ahead of Tyler Reddick, giving Richard Childress Racing its first 1-2 NASCAR Cup finish in 9 years. Kyle Busch, who had Saturday's win voided via disqualification on Saturday, finished fourth. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
I tell you what, to compare to where you started your Sports Center Reads at 10 o'clock to where we're here in the last hour of the Levitard show, it's amazing. You could be coached.
I'm coachable.
You are coachable. Joining us right now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, one of those coaches who probably does as good of a job of coaching up his talent as anybody in college football, Coach Dan Mullen. Coach, let's start with this question. If I were to tell you between Chris Doering and me, Peter Burns, that one of us has bet and won $120 gambling on sixth grade girls club volleyball in the state of New Mexico, who do you think it would be?
That would definitely be Doran.
Yes!
I gotta go with him.
I told PB you were going to guess me, and it in fact is Peter Burns. I've never even stepped foot in New Mexico to this point in time in my life.
Well, the New Mexico was the only one that gave you a chance. Me a little bit of hesitation not to pick Doran, but... Peter, you just really dropped yourself in my book right there.
What really? I wasn't. I got to be honest with you. I wasn't real high in your book right now, and I know you and Megan are probably disappointed in me. But what
the great part about that is that he thought that's where I was in his book. He had me being in that book already down at that low point.
Yeah, I mean, That would be like a regular Tuesday afternoon for Doring to me. You know what I mean, right?
Now, full disclosure, Coach, I did not know any of the kids. I was just there as a spectator on behalf of my – you've met my wife, Lauren. It was her niece that was there. I got drug along to this thing, and I was just trying to kill some time. So does that change your perception? It wasn't like I knew inside information on sixth grade girls club volleyball and I was trying to make money. I was just trying to kill some time here.
Yeah, I mean, just really think about that for a second, though. Just think about where that pulls yourself. I mean, you're sitting there. Were you putting odds out? Were you taking odds, or who were you actually betting?
So what it was there was another dad. There was a dad there, and he was watching his daughter court over. And we both of them started talking about how boring this was. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm here all day." And I was like, "Well, why don't we? I'll tell you what. Why don't we go on the other side of the court and of the gymnasium and just bet on this random team? And I'll take whoever, you take whatever." And by the end of the day, we had like eight dads that were together, like this this gambling group, and there was money flying. I'm not proud of the moment, Dan Mullen, but it is what it is.
Well, I guess that would be like going to any little league field and checking what's in the what's actually in all the Yeti cups around like a little league field, right? Hey, there's a noon little league game at like going on. Everyone's got their Yeti cup out there. Like, hey, what's in there? Oh, just some water, you know.
That's exactly right, Coach. Hey, PB, I don't know if you know this or not. You probably remember a couple years ago, as part of one of the SEC Network spring assignments, I went out with Coach Mullen. We ran. He had me like on a 10-mile run at like 6 in the morning. So Coach Mullen, very accomplished when it comes to running. In fact, ran in the Boston Marathon a couple years back. Coach, I know you like to challenge yourself. During this time, that things have been a little bit more less scheduled. What have you done to challenge yourself that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise done over the last couple months?
Well, certainly, I don't know. I think I don't know if the running would be up there for me. I got back. I'm trying to get myself back going. I think I've put on the COVID-19, but that's a result of like when you're at work all the time, I'm on this very get up early, run, set schedule, eat healthy in the office, meeting times. You know, when I'm at home with like Megan and the kids, I mean, it's like, oh, we'd like this for lunch. Hey, break out the chips. Oh, hey, I'm not going to finish that, Dad. Why don't you finish my slice of pizza here? It's a little bit different diet. So, I don't know that I've done anything special in that time. I'm a little disappointed in myself. I really, I could have like trained for a triathlon or gone like really to that extreme. But, I think the biggest struggle I've had is I'm a very exact, detailed, scheduled person. Mm-hmm. And the whole COVID kind of, let's stay at home and let's try to figure it out and we'll figure it out. And, I like schedules. I like detail. I like exactness. So that's probably been my biggest struggle, is trying to overcome the lack of structure, because I'm a big structure person.
That idea of let's figure it out is something that the players in the NFL are complaining about right now, right? They don't feel like the NFL has a good enough plan put together for how they can safely play and report to training camp. Do you get the feeling that, what's gone on in the NCAA and with the SEC specifically, that there's a better plan taking place on how to go about getting a season played this fall and to do it safely as possible?
Well, I'm not sure. I think a lot of the question marks are out there. Like, I read through the NFL's testing procedure plan, or the, you know, more – the biggest one to me is the tracing policy, you know what I mean? What are you doing for guys that have tested negative, have no symptoms, you know, but might have, like, you know, walked down the hall with somebody that tested positive? You know, and how are they being punished? So I've read some of the NFL testing things. I think they probably have some work to do, but I think theirs is a much better policy than what I've seen in college so far for us, you know, with what's come out. But I think there's still so many questions that are out there. You know, I think one big thing, the majority of the guys on our team that I've talked to, I mean, they want to play. You know, they want to go out and play football. And, you know, I think they look at it and, you know, the problem is no one's played, no one's done this. And, you know, I think if you're in a house behind closed doors with your family and living there full time, you're going to spread the virus pretty quickly. If you're at a nightclub with 500 people, you know, shoulder to shoulder in the nightclub, there's a good chance the virus will spread quickly. If you're out there in a stadium playing a football game, I don't know if we know much about that yet, you know? And so what are the ways that we can safely do that without just saying, no, we can't do it. Let's try to, as best we can, try to keep everybody safe, as well as educating ourselves. Because I think the majority of, I'm guessing majority of coaches and majority of players, I mean, the people I have contact with, the majority wanted, they just want to go, they want to go play.
Mm-hmm. Coach Dan Mullen of the Florida Gators joining Peter Burns and Chris Doering here on the Dan Le Batard Show. Coach, what is your routine like right now? What I mean is, do you talk to Scott Strickland every single day and wait for an update, or do you just wait until you get a phone call? What's that process from a head coach's perspective about playing this upcoming season?
Well, you know, I mean, you're trying to do one thing, I guess, as coaches, we're pretty organized. So right now, you know, we're kind of what I've called phase one, which are, you know, with the NCAA, which our players are back. They have weightlifting. We continue to do all our meetings virtually. I think, you know, I mean, I'd much rather see people in person. But for what we know right now, that's been pretty safe for us. We've gotten used to it. Our guys know how to do it, so we do those meetings virtually. You know, and we've prepped. You know, we've prepped for July 24th when we can start having walkthroughs with the players, and we kind of what I call getting into phase two. And we've also prepped for phase three, which is August 7th, the start of training camp. So we're kind of, as a coaching staff, working on that schedule right now. Like, hey, we're planning on starting the season on time, and because that's the information that we have. I think as updates come, I think you just drive yourself crazy at times. I think if you just sit there and you're like, okay, what's today's update? I think you pay attention to it, but it's not a constant call, what's new, because I think, we're getting daily information, but we're not making daily updates, if you will. I think they're coming more weekly. You know, hey, let's gather information this week, then we'll make a decision at the end of the week where we're at. And I think that's kind of what you're saying. Or, you know, gather information the week at the beginning of the next week. This is now what we're going to do moving forward. So we're kind of more that way. We're working on the schedule that they've given us and the phase that we're in right now. We'll continue to do that until someone gives us a new schedule.
Coach, when the players showed back up on campus for these voluntary workouts, it seemed like around the country there were a lot of positive tests, and that seemed to sound some alarm for people. But over the last couple of weeks, the news coming out of most of the testing on college campuses for these athletes is the numbers are really low. Are you getting the feeling that these players themselves are understanding their portion of the responsibility for having a season being played this year, meaning they're doing the right things away from the facility that maybe they weren't early on?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, one of the crazy ones, when our guys came back, we as a team, we had zero positives when the guys got back. Now, granted, you know, I think when things open up, and things have opened up a lot more in the state of Florida, statistically speaking, you're going to have more positives, and we've had some. You know, but I do think the players, do have a good understanding of it, you know. And I mean, to this day, though, I mean, to be honest with you, that's what, when you get into the what is the best practices, we to this day have still have more. We've had more guys quarantine that were asymptomatic with negative tests, but because of the tracing program, they've had to go into quarantine than we've had positives. And so I think that's something that, and I think people understand it, but it does cause frustration for guys like, hey, I've been trying to do things right. You know, I've worn my mask. I've tried to do these areas. I've been this. You know what? I had dinner with somebody and they tested positive, ended up testing positive, and, you know, I'm the one having to quarantine as well for it. So I think it's trying to find that balance is a big key for us to move forward.
Well, and for all of us, we all want to see it, and including a huge matchup against the Georgia Bulldogs and the rest of the SEC coming up, hopefully, for you. Tell Cannon I'll take him in a bet against you on the golf course the next time. I'm putting all my money on Cannon.
Well, okay. We did, you know, we played a little bit yesterday, and I kind of, you would have lost that bet yesterday.
Ooh.
But generally speaking, it all, you know, I think for him, it depends what tees we make him go play from a little bit. You know, I mean, of what advantage you want to give him. You know, of are we making him bump back to maybe skill level, or letting him play up at his age level of tees right there? You can make those different arguments, right?
Coach,
what's going on? Have you gotten in the quarantine? Have you gotten in this whole deal of the COVID? Is you down to a scratch golfer now? Is that what it is? That's what I've heard.
I wish. I cannot confirm nor deny how many ESPN
and SEC
network meetings that I can
back.
Do it. Might have shot 70 a couple of days ago. All right, Coach Baldwin, we got a roll. I appreciate the time. Tell everybody we said hello down there, right?
I will. Great to be with you guys. Have a great day. Go Gators.
Thanks, Coach.
There it is. Coach Dan Mullen, the Florida Gators, joining us. Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gotts. They'll be back tomorrow. Peter Burns and Chris Doering here with you. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. And the Dan Le Batard Show brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. Man landed on the moon way back in the day on today's date. Back in, what was it, 1964, a more important date. A 21-year-old English man wrote a letter to William Hill asking the sportsbook what odds would it give him if man was able to land on the moon. William Hill, the sportsbook, went out and said, hey, 1,000 to 1, whatever, and I'll give you a date. As long as, if man is on the moon before 1971, January 1st, any country, you could do it. So this guy, David Thirlwell, wasn't exactly a betting man and said, why not? So he placed a 10-pound bet that would win him 10,000 pounds. On this day, July 20th, 1969, 5 years after placing his wager, Thirlwell watched Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin land on the moon, and he celebrated live, winning what's the equivalent now of $24,000. CD, that was
No. It was $24,000 in U.S. currency at that time, which would be worth, I think, $168,000 now, I think, today's dollar.
In today's day, right. Yeah. Not bad. Yeah. Not a bad little payday.
You left out the most important part of that story, though.
Yes. What is that?
He got killed in the car accident like a year later.
Wait, so, why is that an important part of the story? Like, that has nothing to do with the story. Like, Debbie Downer, like, we've tried to be positive this entire... I talked about the coronavirus Oxford vaccine being good news. I felt like we were on a good positive note. You've nailed all your SportsCenter updates for the last at least hour. And then I tell this great story about how this guy made a bunch of money paying off on a man on the moon bet. And then you got to go yada, yada, yada. He died in a car accident.
I think you also left out the fact that he may have had some inside information from NASA. The odds were much shorter within the building, and maybe karma got him. You know, we talked about the gambling gods earlier.
Wow.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, didn't even get to spend his money.
Where was it? Unbelievable. Did you just turn into Chris Cody and try to be a show killer just at the end of it and just be all about content? I give you, we're on this show for 3 hours. I get nothing for you for 2 hours and 45 minutes. And now for the last 5 minute segment, you're just ripping guys who are getting
killed. You're mad at me because I read the whole story.
Training.
Like, you read the headlines. I read the whole story. And the bottom part is the most important, where they include he was killed in an accident a year after winning that bet. It just seems a little karmatic to me.
You can follow him on Twitter. I won't even mention what karma needs to be brought to you at this point. At Chris Dore, you can follow me at Peter Burns, ESPN. Thank you for allowing us to run this show into the ground for at least, well, I thought 2 hours and 58 minutes, but we went all 3 hours today. CD, have a safe day. Wear a seatbelt, my friend. That's all I can say now. Thanks for listening. Le Batard back tomorrow.